Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, Pennsylvania's utilities are warned to be prepared for cyber attacks. But up front, try to remember before the 2020 presidential campaign, the election, and subsequent controversy created by former President Donald Trump, falsely claiming he lost because of fraud. Even before the coronavirus pandemic, I know it seems like a long time ago, but before all those things happened, one of the hot-button political issues was congressional redistricting, with accusations of gerrymandering, the majority party in a state's legislature adopting districts that favor their party. In Pennsylvania, Republicans are in the majority, and the state Supreme Court ruled in 2018 that the map drawn a decade ago was gerrymandered and instituted different boundaries the court said were more fair. There are other factors this year. The census numbers are late. Pennsylvania could lose a congressional seat due to declining population. And there's a proposal to pick state Supreme Court justices by districts rather than statewide. On today's Smart Talk, we hear from two groups that want more citizen input into the process and more transparency as well. Joining us are Carol Cunaholm, chair of Fair Districts Pennsylvania, and David Thornburg, president and CEO of the Committee of 70. Carol Cunaholm, let me ask you first. Well, I ask both of you this question, but why is this such an important issue?
Well, maps matter a great deal for representation and for policy as well. The next 10 to 12 months of redistricting will shape the next decade of representation in Congress and the Pennsylvania legislature. When one party locks an advantage with distorted maps, that party can ignore the concerns of the other party almost completely. And when individual legislators are given safe custom districts, whether at the congressional or legislative level, they can really ignore everyone except the party leaders and their most partisan base. And that makes collaboration in Congress or Harrisburg much more difficult, and it guarantees that the complex problems that face us will continue to go unsolved. So with better maps, we would have better, more responsive representation and a better chance to find the good solutions that would work for all of us. So this is a really important question, a really important issue, and the next 10 to 12 months will really shape what happens for the next decade and beyond.
David Thornburg, how important of an issue? I mean, Carol listed the reasons it is important, but there are those who point to redistricting or gerrymandering or unfair maps as one of the reasons that we have such a partisan divide in this country right now, and that there's gridlock often on important or hot-button issues. What do you think?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of truth to that, and Scott, thanks for having me today. Let's start with the basics. In my view, I'm no argument from Carol, I'm sure, the maps belong to the people. They don't belong to the temporary representatives who happen to be elected by the people in that district. And in the past, when districts have been drawn exclusively by the elected representatives, all kinds of dysfunctional behavior takes place. And it makes it hard to govern. And I think to your point, it carves districts into even more polarized political groups that when they all meet in Harrisburg, when you elect representatives from those kinds of districts and they meet in Harrisburg, they find no sense of common ground. And it's not surprising given the way that the districts are drawn and the way they're elected. So our group views this as a fundamental solution to a lot of the partisan and cynical gridlock that we've experienced the last few years.
But David, and by the way, I wanted to offer my condolences on the death of your father, former Governor Dick Thornburg, one of Pennsylvania's most effective governors, but want to offer, I'm sure our listeners feel the same way. But David, doing it this way in Pennsylvania for a long time, what's changed?
Well, just because we've been doing this for a long time doesn't necessarily make it the best way to govern. You know, over the maps have been getting worse and worse, frankly, every time we do this, every 10 years. And part of the reason is that the technology has improved so that the partisan map makers can operate with diabolical precision, literally carving this person in or that person out, or putting one side of the street in one district and the other side in the other district. So that, I think, bears a lot of responsibility for what's happened. The good news is, though, and we'll talk about this later, I'm sure, that technology is now democratized. We've launched this Draw the Lines PA initiative that's allow anyone in the Commonwealth to draw their own maps and demonstrate that thousands and thousands of people across the Commonwealth care about this issue and that they want a hand in the drawing of these districts. So I think the tables have been turned in a lot of ways.
Carol,
I'll jump in and say that
I
do know that this has been a problem. This has been a problem for a long time. It's gotten definitely worse. But even back in 1985, the new Senate State Government Committee Chair, David Argall, back in 1985, introduced legislation to put better guardrails on the redistricting process. So we know that even back in the 80s, there were people starting to notice that the system was not really fair, not transparent, and not really set up to guarantee fair representation for the people of Pennsylvania. That was back in 1985. I know the League of Women Voters. I'm also vice president for government and social policy for the League of Women Voters of Pennsylvania. The League of Women Voters has been advocating for better rules and better maps since 1990. So this has been going on a long time. It just has gotten far worse, as David said, with the incredible precision available through the current technology.
Carol, the broad question, what are you looking for? What do you want to see done?
We have been working for better rules for the redistricting process for 5 years. Our hope had been to have an independent commission so that the process would be taken completely away from the legislators, who have a vested interest in having their own maps and having their own party and to have an advantage. There is no other major democracy that allows legislators such a large role in deciding the maps. And we have seen other states implement really good independent commissions to draw the maps. We've run out of time to do that. We don't have independent initiative and referendum for citizens here in Pennsylvania. And the legislators have not been willing to give up that power. But at this point, we're looking to have them put better guardrails in place as quickly as they can. We're supporting a bill we call LACRA, the Legislative and Congressional Redistricting Act, House Bill 22, Senate Bill 222, which would require public engagement, submission of public maps, transparency about what data is used, and put some real guidelines around how the districts are drawn and require explanation when communities are divided or counties are divided unnecessarily, or that it would forbid unnecessary division, but just put better rules in place and put much, much more transparency and public input around it.
Scott, let me jump in on that. You know, 2 years ago, Governor Wolf appointed me to chair a commission to talk to Pennsylvanians about what they wanted from the redistricting process, a bipartisan commission. We spent lots of time traveling the highways and byways and talking to folks. And it occurred to us there are sort of three sources of three checks against the system that you can implement. One is the who will actually draw the maps, who approves the maps, who originates the maps. The second is the what are the rules, as Carol said, what are the guidelines by which the maps are drawn? And the third is the how, which is relates to the process of citizen engagement and transparency and a robust website that makes sure that everybody knows what the deal is. And as Carol said, the clock has moved on, and what we're left with is, but there's with a lot of power still, there's we can focus on the what and the how. We can focus on the rules by which the maps are drawn, and we can focus on a robust process that engages citizens and draws on, again, the unprecedented outpouring of interest in this issue that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. So there's a lot of work to do. You mentioned the congressional maps. You know, we also have to draw the state legislative maps, and that's a parallel process that we can talk about. But there's a lot of work to do between now and, let's say, next spring when the final maps are drawn. But there are still significant ways for citizens to impact the process.
Just as an aside, as you're well aware, David, to let our listeners know, just this week, when you talk about the state legislative districts, a commission was appointed. What that is the majority and minority leaders of both the state and Senate, or the House and the Senate, I should say, and then a fifth member, usually the Supreme Court, appoints that member. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a few minutes. I'm curious, David, sure. You know, whenever I have this conversation, and I kind of alluded to this in my introduction, but I know that, you know, Carol mentioned 5 years ago when Fair Districts started. Committee of 70 has been working on this for some time. But I remember a time when, if I would say redistricting, people would look at you like, what are you talking about? That it just wasn't an issue that resonated with a lot of people. That does not seem to be the case now, but I'm curious as to what kind of reaction you got when you were on the road hearing from Pennsylvanians. I mean, to call it a hot button issue, is that accurate? Is this an issue that Pennsylvanians care about?
Well, by comparison to maybe the sleepy past that you talked about, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think we had over 1,200 people show up around the Commonwealth at libraries and rec centers and community colleges and so forth to talk to us. And moreover, it's the emotion, it's the passion that came through. You know, Pennsylvania is a state of a very localized state. We have thousands of local jurisdictions and communities. And when you hear people from a little tiny borough in, you know, Berks County or the city of Erie talk with great passion about how the maps split and divided and carved up their communities, which made it difficult for them to figure out who even to talk to if they had some issue, or the fact that, you know, a school district might be carved up into three or four legislative districts. Again, it just confounds people and it frustrates them. And so this issue, like, you know, let's just admit, over the last 4 or 5 years, a lot of the fundamentals of democracy have been much more to the fore and embraced, and a lot of people questioning a lot of things. So there's been a general upwelling of interest in the sort of the rules of democracy, and this is one. But you know, I think it's all positive. This is what we should be doing in this country.
Let me say, we just hit 1,000 informational meetings. We have a volunteer speakers bureau, all volunteers, a volunteer who coordinates it. And we have had 1,000 informational meetings explaining gerrymandering, redistricting, legislative process over the last 5 years. We hit 1,000 last week, attended by over 42,000 Pennsylvanians. And unanimously, whenever we present, wherever we talk, at the end, people say, what do I do? You know, now that I understand this, what do I need to do? And we have thousands of volunteers across the state who are busily writing postcards or setting up more meetings. We've had 70 meetings just since the start of the year. And we have, you know, numerous meetings every week on Zoom, which makes it possible to reach even more people. So once people look at maps and begin to think about this, and my own school district, David mentioned school districts, my own school district is divided among 5 house districts. Once people look at maps and see that, they say, this is not right. This is not okay. And whatever party, wherever part of the state they live, once people look, they say, we've got to fix this. And there's a great deal of energy and interest in really structural change, in making sure that the kind of the basic foundations of our representation are solid and work well. And this is one that people have realized is not solid and is not working well for the people of Pennsylvania.
And one of the remarkable things that we've seen is this great interest in young people, in high school students and college students. Our Draw Lines PA competition has found a real home in those communities. And to hear, you know, a 14-year-old Kyle Hines from State College, or Lauren Ban, who's a University of Pittsburgh student, talk with great eloquence and passion about this process and all that's gone wrong in the past. But with this hope and determination that we can do better in Pennsylvania is really inspiring. those are the folks that are going to inherit this democracy and going to have to live with it for the next 10 years or 20 years or whatever. So that tells me this is not just, you know, an issue for folks like me and Carol that do this, professionally. This has reached all levels of society in Pennsylvania.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Carol Cunaholm, who is chair of Fair Districts PA, and David Thornburg, president and CEO of the Committee of 70. We're talking about redistricting, an issue that, as you've heard from our guest, means a lot to many people in Pennsylvania, but there have been so many other issues over the last year. But with the legislature taking action soon on redrawing state legislative district lines and congressional districts, you're sure to hear more about it. If you have a question or comment, our phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk, WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Carol, a question for you. This is, a lot of people wonder how you measure what is a fair district when it is drawn. Actually, the U.S. Supreme Court has been hesitant to weigh in on redistricting cases over the years, maybe partly because it's never really been defined what is fair. A lot of times they look at it as a state issue, a political issue, and we want to know, you know, how do you measure fairness? Now, I saw on your website, I don't know if I'd call it a formula, but you ask questions, measurements of what is a fair district. What are some of those measurements?
Well, I would say, first of all, the Pennsylvania Constitution has some clear language about what a district should be. It should be compact, contiguous, and divide as few divisions as possible of counties, municipalities, wards, et cetera. And so we start there. We say that if a district is drawn in a really strange way and is dividing lots of counties, it's obviously done for some purpose other than simply to represent those counties. So we start there. And then we add that it's not drawn for any partisan bias, so that there are new measures that you can check partisan bias and see, is this map being drawn to give advantage to one party or another? That would be the next measure of fairness. The LACRA bill that we're supporting starts with the constitutional requirements, but puts some guardrails on it. So, for instance, counties. Montgomery County was divided into 5 congressional districts in 2011. There's no reason for it. By number, it should be one and a little bit of another. My own county, Chester County, was divided into 4 congressional districts, and by any measure, it should be in one, part of one. So we simply say in the bill that it should be divided no more than numerically necessary plus one to give a little latitude, but not to give the kind of latitude that the map drawers have given themselves in the past. So simply to put some mathematical boundaries on how divisions are done. There are also ways to measure compactness. So you can look at a map and see, hey, you can draw a good map with very few divisions and have this level of compactness, or you can draw a map with lots of divisions and that measure of compactness. So obviously one is more constitutional and simply more fair. So we're not trying to say that the map needs to be proportional. We're not saying that every district needs to be competitive. We're simply saying that maps really should represent the counties and communities of Pennsylvania, and that they need to meet constitutional requirements. Our bill also puts in place secondary considerations of, to the extent necessary after following the first requirements, to recognize communities of interest, which would be things like school districts or, you know, the Susquehanna Valley cities in the north part of the Susquehanna. Also to recognize geographic boundaries. In Pennsylvania, I get calls pretty regularly from people all over the state saying, I have to drive around this mountain to get to my legislator's office, or there's no way to get from my home to my legislator's office without going through 2 other districts because of the way it's drawn. So just recognizing geographic boundaries, watching communities of interest. And then the final requirement would be that it would be responsive to voters. So if there's a swing in the way voters vote, there ought to be a swing in the number of seats per party. Right now in Pennsylvania's districts, that's not that very, 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 very rarely the case that voters have any way to shift the proportion of seats. So that's a complex system of measurements and values, but that's the way we would define it.
So let me just take a sort of slightly different tack on that, although, which is that, you know, people will judge the maps to be fair if they trust the process that produced the maps. And in order to trust the process that produced the maps, they have to feel like they had access to that process. It's kind of like, you know, what's a fair way to tax people? What's a fair way to draw up the state's budget? Well, when people have a chance to testify in front of the legislature, when they can surface their own proposals and engage in the great back and forth of the democratic process, they're going to be much more likely to be okay with the result that comes out from that process. And that's never been the case, really, in Pennsylvania. But we have an opportunity, a historic opportunity, to make this a much more people-powered process than ever before. And if we do, and there's a healthy democratic debate around the maps, then I think people will judge them to be a fair result of that process.
So what you're talking about is having some public hearings. I remind our listeners that 10 years ago when this happened, well, actually it was not quite 10 years ago, but at the beginning of the decade when redistricting occurred, it went from commission to Governor Corbett and was signed within 10 days. So how many hearings, what kind of hearings, what would they look like, David? What are you advocating?
Well, let's sort of start with the basics. First, on the state side, as you said earlier, we've just certified the Legislative Reinforcement Commission, which is two Democrats, two Republicans, and a fifth member to be chosen, we hope, by those four. We're advocating that selection process of the fifth member be as public and open a process as possible. So that's one way that the leaders can signal that this is an inclusive process and not a prototypical backroom deal. You know, when it comes to the congressional maps and also drawing the state maps, it's really important that we use the best website technology and website access that we can to allow people to upload their own maps that they've drawn, or to get access to the data that's being used to draw the maps. So it's much more than sort of the stuffy, somewhat stiff public hearings that we've had in the past. We have an opportunity to do something that we've never done before. And then again, if we can do that, if we can encourage the legislative leaders to take that step, we'll have a process that people will trust and maps that people will trust.
Let me offer three hopeful signs just from this week. One is the appointment of those four Legislative Reapportionment Commission members. The fact that was done now means that that process can get started of choosing that fifth person and getting moving on that. That's encouraging. Another encouraging aspect is the statement from Senate leaders that they are planning to have hearings beginning this summer, so that they will have had lots of input from communities before they draw the maps, which is a good thing that we will be watching for that. And the third one is that the Pennsylvania redistricting website, which was kind of an old, stuffy, not particularly useful, not a lot of great data on it, is in the process of being redone. We just discovered that this week, and it has data going back to 1931 and maps going back to 1906. That's new. So there's a lot more information, a lot more data, and it's a good first step towards what David described of having a website that people can actually see what's happening as it's happening and offer input. It doesn't yet have a place to offer input. It doesn't yet have a way to submit maps, but it's encouraging that website is in the process of being redesigned and offers right now shape files for census redistricting from 2020. There's some good stuff available on that website, and we're hopeful that there will be a more transparent process. We still would like to see that in the rules. We'd like to see legislation pass, but we do see some signs that there will be a perhaps a more public process this time than last time.
Well, one other thing on those regards, I'd just like to recognize that the state Senator Argel, who Carol mentioned earlier, is looking for co-sponsors for a bill that would determine the qualifications by which that fifth member, or the qualifications that we should be looking for in that fifth member. And it's kind of a race against the clock to see if that legislation can move fast enough to affect this process. But that's a good step forward because it gets people thinking about, you know, who we want in that pivotal fifth member seat to help steer the process by which the maps are drawn, which has never, never been chosen by the four members. It's always gone to the Supreme Court. And I think a lot of folks would like to see the four members step up and actually make that decision this time around. So, you know, I agree. It's, you know, almost springtime and there are some encouraging signs as we look out the window.
But, you know, the bottom line is that you're asking legislators to give up some power. And some may even view it as making it harder for themselves to win re-election and easier to lose their jobs. Legislators are always hesitant to do something like this that would end up with them losing some power. So that's, I mean, whether people verbalize that or not, we know that that's part of the problem here, part of the challenge here. So, Carol, how do you overcome that? I mean, you said yourself, Pennsylvania is not a state where we have a lot of referendums, and unless it's on a constitutional amendment or something that's non-binding. So how do you overcome legislators looking out for themselves?
We would say right now is a good time to have this conversation. For the last 20 years, the Republicans have had the final vote on legislative reapportionment. So the fifth person, as David said, has been chosen by the state Supreme Court. The majority of the state Supreme Court in 2001 and 2011 was Republican, and that fifth vote was a Republican. The Republicans locked in a majority in both chambers for most of the last two decades. This time around, it's going to be different. There is a majority, a Democratic majority on the Supreme Court. So that fifth person, unless the four choose a really impartial person, which would be a very interesting development, the likelihood is that that fifth person will be chosen by the Democratic Supreme Court. And if I was a Republican legislator, I would be thinking that perhaps I should put better rules in place before the Democrats have the final say on the maps that determine my future, because we know that there have been Democrats drawn into the same district, so they have to, you know, run against each other. We know that there have been Democratic districts that have been divided out so that that district vanishes and moves to the other side of the state. And for sure, that kind of behavior will happen in reverse this time around unless there are really good guidelines in place. So to me, it's a chance for the Republicans to say, let's put some better rules in place before our opponents, and it's sad that that would be the way it's thought of, but that is the way it's thought of, before they have a chance to return the favor of a Democratic gerrymander. And it certainly, we don't expect to see as extreme a gerrymander in either Congress or state legislatures, just because there is so much public attention. But if the Democrats are the ones who have the final say, as a Republican legislator who could change this now, our argument would be change it now. This is the time to do it before those maps are drawn.
Well, yeah, and let me add that this is not just a Republican issue. In other states where Democrats are in the majority in the legislature, there have been accusations of gerrymandering as well. And there are some differences this time around compared to the last redistricting. One, the last time there was a Republican governor and Republicans had the majority in both the House and Senate. This time you have a Democrat who is the governor, has the power to veto some of those maps. Also, another big factor this time is when you're talking about congressional boundaries is that a very good chance Pennsylvania may lose a seat. So rather than 18, we would have 17 congressional seats. So how do those two things factor into what's going to happen this year with drawing these boundaries, David?
Yeah, well, to capsulize your astute observations, someone says uncertainty is the best friend of political reform. There's a lot of uncertainty out there, political uncertainty, uncertainty about how we go from 18 to 17 districts. So I think that that creates a context in which the people's voice can be heard in a much more powerful way than it has in the past. People don't appreciate on the congressional side, there really are no rules about how you move, in this case, from 18 to 17 seats. And if you look at the past, it's been a sorry, sordid tale of political manipulation and payback and all kinds of maneuvers and contortions. I mean, sadly, Pennsylvania has been losing congressional seats pretty much every decade since the 30s. So we've had a lot of experience in this process, and it's not pretty. It really adds to the cynicism that people too often feel about government. So, you know, I think this just creates an opportunity. You mentioned the political lineup because you have a Democratic governor and a Republican General Assembly. This creates an atmosphere in which we can step forward with a full and transparent process and the right kinds of guardrails where we can get a better result that people will trust.
Another factor, Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled in 2018, we've touched on this, that the last decade's maps were gerrymandered. Democrats control that court. But now there is a proposal for a constitutional amendment to elect judges by district. Now, the result of this could be that the legislature could not only be drawing up congressional and legislative district lines, but also judicial district lines. And it also could change the makeup of the court. Carol, do you and your organization have an opinion on that, what could be a ballot question?
Yeah, we came out very strongly, even just, you know, before the vote on it. And many, many, more than 100 organizations were part of sign-on letters in opposition. Bar associations across the state have spoken out against it. That bill was pushed through the first session, last session. Any constitutional amendment has to go through two sessions before it goes to a ballot vote. And last session, it was pushed through without any kind of expert testimony, without any kind of real deliberation. We clocked 9 minutes in the Senate State Government Committee, which is unexcusable for a constitutional amendment that would really change the balance of powers in the state. So there is extremely strong opposition to this. Unfortunately, it has been tabled for now. It is not going to be on the ballot this May, and certainly our organization and many, many organizations will be watching closely. That is it's a bad bill and an extremely bad process that brought it forward.
Why do you
Let
say
me chime
so
in, Scott.
Go ahead, David.
My view, this was a bad idea. This is the worst version of a bad idea that we could come up with. It violates the separation of the legislative and judicial branches. It further politicizes the election of judiciary, and it fails to recognize that the justices weigh in on the basis of the Constitution of Pennsylvania, not the feelings of their part of the Commonwealth. So I hope that this fades as we enter the spring and summer.
We had an email here from Abby who said that people have to know that this is a bipartisan issue, that it is not just a Republican, not just a Democratic issue. And, you know, something to point out, Representative Wendy Thomas, who is a Republican, has introduced legislation and has appeared on this program that would result in a commission. That may be long term, but it can be a bipartisan, should be a bipartisan issue. We're almost out of time. So what happens next? Carol, I'll give you first word on this. What happens next in this process?
Well, so I would say Wendy Thomas is actually the prime sponsor of the bill that we support, the LACRA bill, House Bill 22. And we have had Republican prime sponsors of legislation ever since we started. Every session, we have had Republicans with their names first on bills, and we've had a good number of Republicans sponsoring bills. We will continue to push for those bills to get passed, and we will continue just to call public attention to the issue and invite people to be watching the process as it plays out and letting their legislators know we want real reform, we want better guidelines, and we absolutely need to have better maps this time. I would encourage people to look at fairdistrictspa.com, our website. There's a lot of information there and a lot of ways to get involved in the process.
David Thornburg.
Scott, here's what I'd say. We mentioned the Legislative Reapportionment Commission. They now have 45 days to choose the fifth member and chair. So by April 30th, if they're going to do their jobs, that chair will be named. And we're really encouraging that that be a public process, an open process, that the LRC accept formally applications from the public. And we're encouraging people to go to our drawthelinespa.org website to add their support to that. We think that'll be an important first step, sort of first step of spring, to signal the fact that we're going to do this differently this time. So, but it's going to be a long haul. We're going to be in this maybe for the balance of this next year.
Carol Cunaholm is chair of Fair Districts Pennsylvania. David Thornburg, president and CEO of the Committee of 70. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, amongst the topics we will address, 90th anniversary of the Harrisburg Symphony Orchestra. That's coming up on tomorrow's program. In early February, a Florida water system operator noticed his computer cursor moving around on the screen, independent of his actions. A cyber hack was underway with the intruder altering the chemical levels involved in the water treatment. That event, which is now under investigation, alarmed state and local utility officials around the country. How vulnerable are Pennsylvania public utilities and water systems to a cyber threat? Niels Hagen Fredrickson is the press secretary for the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission, and he joins us today. Niels, thanks for joining us. I mean, this is a scary situation when you have hackers that are able to control chemicals in a water system. What can you tell me about that? I mean, how much do you know about what happened in that Florida situation?
Well, what we know is based on the same kind of public information that you have, and that's very clear. There was an attempt to gain access to this system in Florida, and operators fortunately were able to discover it very quickly, lock out the remote access, bring their systems back to normal levels, and there really wasn't any interruption in the water service there. But in the course of what's gone on, investigators, and this is under investigation in Florida by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and officials in Florida, based on what they were able to early identify, there were enough concerns about potential cybersecurity issues that the PUC decided to warn water operators in Pennsylvania. Now that's the regulated community. Understand the PUC reaches a lot of utilities in Pennsylvania, but not every water system is regulated by the PUC here in Pennsylvania, especially a lot of the municipal systems. So we also decided to publicize the cyber advisory so they would have access to the information. And, you know, it really led to some concerns that were raised about the cybersecurity that was in place at that system in Florida. Now, was that an outlier, or are there, you know, similar slips elsewhere? That's always a big concern for us. So if you've seen the PUC's advisory, it's recommending things not only to the utility community, but really to anybody that might be working remotely or anybody that might be operating a business with computer access. Things like making sure that your operating system is up to date. Based on what investigators have said about the Florida incident, they were operating using an older version of Windows 7, which actually isn't supported by Microsoft anymore, and so doesn't have that security backup from the software company. Passwords, from what we understand about what was going on in Florida, multiple users in their system were using the same username and password for remote access. Common passwords is a big cybersecurity no-no. And putting in place other basic, they call them cyber hygiene practices, complex passwords, unique usernames, strong firewalls, updating your software, updating your systems. You know, even on a home user point of view, it's a little frustrating when your phone prompts you to download a new update from Apple or whatever system you're using. But often those updates are pushed through because they've identified security issues. And if you're the one person out there who doesn't download that update, you've made your system more vulnerable. So there's a lot of investigative work that's still going on. You know, was Oldsmar, Florida targeted because it's Oldsmar, Florida? Did somebody pick a small town about the size of Mechanicsburg outside Tampa to target them to cause trouble there? Or from a cybersecurity perspective, was somebody poking around in that system as a way of testing their ability to gain access to other systems elsewhere? And since we often share similar operating systems, similar software, similar firewalls, other things, it can be a layer upon layer type things. And cyber bad actors are often very good at practicing their bad habits on, the weakest link somewhere before they potentially deploy whatever it is that they want to do someplace else.
If you have a question or a comment talking about cybersecurity, talking about utilities and infrastructure, I mean, let's face it, this is part of infrastructure. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalk@witf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I have to think about this, from a Pennsylvania perspective, Nils. Do we know whether there have been attempts or even successful attempts to infiltrate a Pennsylvania utility or some type of Pennsylvania infrastructure?
Well, we certainly know there have been attempts. There are attempts every day, everywhere. Our utility infrastructure, and with that we're talking about electric systems, natural gas, water, wastewater, telecommunications, pipelines. Our infrastructure here in the U.S. is being probed and targeted on a regular basis by actors here and by global bad actors. Some people may be interested in money, because if you think about it, utilities do a lot of processing of transactions, so they have a lot of client financial data. So they're people who are looking at cyber hacking, if you want to call it that, as a way to get money or steal money. But there are also cyber bad actors out there who are looking to potentially disrupt systems, because that can disrupt the economy of a city or a region or a country. So the guard level is on maximum and has been for some time for utilities here in the United States. There have been successful attempts and successful penetration of utility systems elsewhere in the world, the Ukraine and others, where bad actors have targeted their electrical system and other things. We've not seen success here in the United States. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why the Oldsmar, Florida incident made such national headlines. When you're talking about cybersecurity, you often feel like you're talking a bit about Bigfoot. Everybody knows what it's supposed to look like, but very few people can just bring one out and show it to you. Well, with Oldsmar, we have a Bigfoot or a unicorn, as it were. We have an actual incident that occurred a relatively short period of time ago. We have some very good details about what may have happened. We don't know why and we don't know who yet, but it's been enough that we can point to that as a an opportunity to make sure that your security is where it should be, because yes, somebody was just poking around. And you know, the cynic in the cybersecurity experts out there will say it's probably not something that was targeted at a small city outside Tampa. It's probably an attempt to gather information about these, how these systems work, or gather information about some of the computer controls that are used in a facility like that, because chances are those controls are being used elsewhere too.
You know, I don't want to alarm people, but I think back to a movie, and I think it was like 2007, Bruce Willis. It was the Die Hard 4, Live Free or Die Hard, something like that. There were terrorists, domestic terrorists, who infiltrated the infrastructure of, I believe it was just Washington, maybe it was around the country, but anyway, was called a fire sale, and they controlled so much of the infrastructure, stoplights at intersections, water systems, utilities. I mean, that was a movie. And again, I don't want to alarm people, but is that realistic?
Well, it was a movie, and it was also the movie version of cyber hackers with, people in dimly lit rooms with hoodies over their heads, clicking away fast on keyboards and suddenly making things happen all over the place. And if you think about the theme of that particular movie, it was really all about stealing money. It was not necessarily about, you know, crippling the system. The crippling of the systems was an effort to get electronic money to be transferred so the bad guys could steal it. And there are still bad guys out there who are interested in money more than anything else. The level of interconnection that you see in a movie like that is not really there. From a cyber point of view, utilities especially have been very good at insulating the operating side of their system from the internet and the real world. In fact, one of the things that the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security has pointed out about the Florida incident is it appears that perhaps their computer system was plugged into the internet without any sort of firewall or security block. So
wow, I mean they had Windows 7, and that's the concern, is that, and this is what you're trying to do, is to make these utilities aware and to have them update what they have. But this Florida water system sounds like, like they were living in 2007.
Well, I mean, it does right now. We don't have all the details, but you know, we have a list of potential doors or windows that were left open there. In Pennsylvania, cybersecurity has really been part of utility operation for several decades. Really, if you think about it, it goes back to the initial preparations and concerns about Y2K, when we were worried about whether or not computer systems would continue to operate once the year 2000 arrived. And then we saw another wave of enhanced security after 9/11, both because we realized that there were bad actors that would give their lives to attack infrastructure and attack systems. But also, if you remember, there was a lot of loss of computer data for businesses that had their data stored in the World Trade Center complex in New York. So there was a discussion about making sure that there were sufficient backups and that systems that could, that utilities and other businesses could continue to operate even if there was a major 9/11 type incident someplace else. And since then, it's really been about making sure your guard is up against not only the people who want to steal your money, but the people who might just simply be trying to disrupt your system to cause trouble. And utilities are really on the front lines of that. They're also very good at sharing information with each other. one of the things the PUC has been working very hard at for the last decade or so is also having making sure that that flow of information goes between different groups of utilities, because, say, for example, electric utilities tend to be very good at talking to their counterparts in the electric business across Pennsylvania and across the country. But they might face the same kinds of threats that some of their colleagues in the their counterparts in the natural gas industry could face. And the same for telecommunications and other things, because we've come to learn that bad guys might start their attack in one direction, not because they're interested in that company or that utility or that type of system, but because they're trying to gain information to attack something else, someplace else. So
Niels Hagen, Niels, I have to interrupt because we're out of time. But Niels Hagen Fredrickson, obviously important issue, and the PUC making sure that utilities are aware. Thank you very much for being with us today. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.